Tim Stafford, I think he would be embarrassed for me to say this, but as I opened the show and I mentioned conversations with the legends and those becoming, I think Tim has crossed that line. I think that Tim is a legend. Certainly Blue Highway, almost 25 years of the absolute pinnacle of bluegrass music as a band, creativity, quality, every time out, performance. They're such a solid band. And Tim has now released his third solo project entitled Acoustic Guitar. We're going to talk to Tim in the second hour of the program, as is normal. The interview portion is always in the second hour so that you can get ready for it. And spend a little time talking with Tim. Tim's been a frequent guest on this program. Always learn a lot from Tim and enjoy the moments that we spend together. You're going to like it. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. I want to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass, Tim Stafford. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing fine, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks so much for taking some time to chat about the latest solo album we'll put under your name as a solo release. Acoustic Guitar came out last year. You've been a guest on the show many times by yourself and as a representative of Blue Highway, which, again, had another banner year, a great album, and just keeps going strong and strong with personnel changes. Blue Highway has really become one of the standard bearers, I think, in all of bluegrass. I love the band for that reason, and just always something good to see and listen to. And then you do these side projects.
Yeah, well, we're just really lucky, we feel like, to be still going after 24 years. This is our 24th year.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Jeez. I can't believe
it. I had to take off my shoes to count.
Yeah.
I'm sure, but it actually has been 24 years. And yeah, I mean, especially since it was just sort of considered a part-time band when it started, and it became more than that through circumstance and just the way things worked out. It just, you know, it's great to be able to play with those guys, and I feel like we got a really good version of the band right now. And
sure.
Everybody, except the original guys, except for the Dobro, which is Gavin Largen, is great. And like you said, these side projects are something everybody in the band has been able to do from the start, and I think that helps us with our longevity problem.
Don't you think, Tim, and I have the other two you did, Endless Line, and then also the most recently, Just to Hear the Whistle Blow. Don't you think these things are helpful in a creative sense, and also gives you another outlet to do things that don't necessarily have to be part of a band concept?
Totally. That's something that we have kind of stressed unconsciously since the beginning, is that everybody is free to do their own thing, you know. And we've had things like that. I know Rob did a solo album when he was in the band,
mm-hmm.
A year or two after we started, and you know, everybody else except Jason have done solo projects, and I think it's healthy. And like you said, you know, it gives your creative energy another direction. And you know, Rob was even in a group called Three Ring Circle. So, you know, and others of us had played with other folks, you know, and may still in the future, too. So
well,
we've always been just kind of a loose confederation, pure democracy.
Well, and we've talked about that point before, as to what tunes you play, but it also gives you an outlet, but also don't you then bring back some other things as you explore these solo projects to the group, to the Blue Highway group?
Definitely. I've seen that happen in the past, and I just think it's a healthy thing all the way around for a group that values input from all the members and is a democracy. We all have a vote, so it's a way to keep things fresh.
The latest, which came out last year, and we've been meaning to talk about this for a while, is on have it on Hedge Drive Records. Is that right?
Yeah, that's my little private label. My grandmother lived on Hedge Drive.
Oh, good.
So I just made that up.
All right, I like that. You have a selection of guitars, which we let me ask you this over just general question is, you know, there's so many different guitars that you use, and without necessarily getting specific as to what tune you apply them to, because we'll talk about many of the tunes on here. What is it? Is it tone? Is it playability? What are you looking for when you have? I mean, you're a guitar player, and you have, I don't know, I can't count how many guitars are in your credits at the top, but many guitars, a couple Martins. So what is it that makes you use one guitar for an application over another one?
It's dependent on the song, really, because and I just last couple of years, I was able to acquire a Gibson J45 Banner, 1943 Banner guitar. And it's got a very unique sound to it, very different from the Martin. And so I definitely wanted to play that on several tunes on this record because there's a lot of solo things. And it's great for any kind of finger picking. It's got a really neat tone to it that the Martin, it really can't be beat for the bluegrass type things and the band applications. And I've used it, it's a 34 D18. It's been my main guitar for about 20 years now. And so I've used it on every record Blue Highway's done in that time and most others. And on this record, I used it on various ones. And there were other guitars that I used just for the tonality because I thought it might sound good on a particular song. So it's all based on the song, really.
You have tunes on here, Tim, that I would certainly are, and we'll name some of them specifically, that are definitely a bluesy. Well, you have one named Blues, but there's a bluesy sound. You play in a style that, not mimicking, but is certainly influenced or informed by, on a couple of these, by, I would say, Chet Atkins, Doc Watson, sort of a picking style. And then you do have some tunes that the tone is a little more hollow or amplified, and I don't know what that setting is for, but so you do make use of the tonality qualities of each of the guitars that you list, and it's kind of neat to listen to the different ones as they pop. I have 18 songs on acoustic guitar, and I have 15 of them are originals.
Yeah, and that's really what the whole thing was supposed to be. It was sort of a showcase for these original tunes that I had never recorded, and I've had them. Some of them I've had for 30-some years, almost 35 years. There's one tune there. I know that I had a tape, literally, of this thing going back to the 80s. And so I've been writing tunes for a long time, and just there's a lot of them I had not recorded, and I thought, well, if I don't do it now, I probably never will, so just get a few of them out there.
One of the things that always intrigues me, I won't say once you have the freedom to do so, but I don't know how many times in the band concept you would record a 54-second tune. And on this album, you have tunes that range from the opening cut, Safe Water, 54 seconds, that will go to, you know, maybe the very last tune is 3 minutes and 40 seconds, and Angel Terrace is almost. But you have some that are within 2 minutes, a minute and 40-something seconds, a minute and 49. That, to me, is intriguing in that you that's the tune. That's the tune you want to play. That's how you want to play it, and you're finished in 54 seconds. Nobody else has to take a break. That must be kind of a fun thing to do on some of these things that you've had in your head for a while.
It is. It's probably not going to be on a Blue Highway record or any other kind of record, so that's where I felt like I kind of had the freedom. And since they're all solo pieces, except for the few trios,
right?
And there's a duet or two that I have there, and I'm one of the duets. Adam just plays rhythm mandolin, so that doesn't really. He doesn't take a break on that one, so I have to be creative within that framework to try to come up with different ways to state these melodies. And that was a little bit of a challenge, but it was fun, and that's one of the main reasons I did it, because it felt like it'd be a fun project to do.
On the first two cuts on the album, I mentioned Safe Water is 54 seconds. Distant Island is a more normal length, I will say, not that I believe there's anything normal, but those are pretty much you. Really nice. Safe Water is just a pretty song. Distant Island also this must be very relaxing and fun for you to play through tunes like that, and then they're done. The third one, Temperance Real, you do have more of a full band sound on that one.
Yeah, that one's with Gavin Largent, our dobro player, and Adam Steffi. And it's just a trio. I had originally envisioned it as a duet, and I thought, well, I'll just have Adam come in and do his monster mando chop, which I think he has about the best in the business. And he lives half a mile or a mile from me, and we grew up together. And the studio we all use is Bobby Starnes' studio, which is just over the hill.
Okay.
So 10 minutes from my house. So, it just worked out that way with proximity, and Gavin was here staying with me when we were doing something for Blue Highway, so that worked out. And, yeah, you know, those first two songs are actually in a different tuning. They're in a open C9.
Oh, good.
And I capo at 3, so there it would be an open E flat 9 if you listen to it, if you try to play it on piano or something. But those songs have a real open feel to it. It's an open sort of tuning, a lot of open strings. But Distant Island is definitely more dark.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of the original title of Distant Island was Days Gone By, and I thought I would change that because that's actually the title of the first episode of The Walking Dead. And if your listeners are familiar with that show,
I wouldn't have caught that, but I appreciate you bringing that up.
That song was actually inspired by watching Walking Dead. I think I watched the first two seasons in a binge watch one time, and and I was fooling around the guitar and that song came out. So that's pretty dark for that reason.
You know what? I think that happens more than listeners would realize. Because there is a media or a TV or something, you might be sitting around, we'll just use the word noodling, as you're watching something, then you wind up coming with, I don't mean you specifically, but I know a lot of writers and players that do, they'll sit, because when you're sitting in front of a TV for whatever reason, you usually have your instrument with you because it's always part of you, and you wind up having these tunes that are not taken from but certainly inspired by what you're watching. So that's comforting to me that I've heard that so many times that people just, I was watching TV and heard something on TV, and it's not the same song but inspired by, so that's good to know.
I've done that for years, and the cool thing about it is that you are not really watching TV and you're not really playing guitar. You're
no.
Sort of in between.
That's exactly what it is.
And your mind, since it's divided like that, tends to be more creative when you're playing. And a lot of the melodies I've come up with even regular songs that I end up co-writing with other people have come from TV sessions like that. And if I get an idea, I'll mute the TV and I'll record it right away. So that's how a lot of these instrumentals come about, and a lot of melodies, ideas in general.
It's funny that you mention it that way because I don't know how to describe what happens with your brain or your mind or anyone's, but it's kind of like part of your brain is taken up with that other activity, and then you just kind of fall into that. I don't know how it happens, but I think that's...
Sort of frees your mind. You know?
Yeah.
It locks it from being too self-conscious, I think. It takes that self-consciousness out. Anyway,
I agree with you. I like that. No, I like that. I like that concept. Temperance Rear, we mentioned. That's pretty much of a, I would say that's a very an up tempo kind of straight ahead bluegrassy tune, especially with the involvement of the other members. We talked about that a bit. Janet's Waltz. Someone's on fiddle on that one, and that is a beautiful waltz.
Well, thank you. That's actually a cello.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, Dave played cello on 3 tunes on the record. He did this one and the Presbyterian Hymn medley and I'm America. And Dave is an absolutely incredible musician, and I had not met him until I produced a record for a local musician here named Beth Snap. And Beth is a great singer-songwriter, and Dave had played on her record, her first record, and then when I produced her second, I met him and we hit it off immediately. He is a golly, he was a prodigy, man. I mean, he went to Juilliard, and I think he had scholarship offers when he was 7 or something like that. You know, these ridiculous things. And he does a lot of the cello that you hear on television and movies, and he does a ton of soundtracks. And just really was fortunate to be able to get him to play on these tunes. And I love the way he played Janet's waltz.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's just gorgeous. It's a gorgeous waltz. And, yeah, he comes in right at the right moment, and it just really fills it out for really, I think there's just 2 of you on the tune, right?
That's it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
But he stacks the cellos, so it kind of sounds like an orchestra sometimes.
Okay, see, I don't know these things. You're helping me understand more and more. That's a gorgeous tune, man. And then followed by what I think is this, Hillbilly Neighbor, I think, is that's the first one I think of the thumb pick of the Chet Atkins, Doc Merle style. Follows kind of an up-tempo tune, follows right after that on the album. That just must be fun to play.
Yeah, man, that's just total fun, and I'm not real good at that. I mean, I can play it. It doesn't come natural to me as flat picking, but I just have always just sat down and finger-picked a little bit whether I was good at it or not, and I'd come up with these little tunes, and that was one of them. And I think the key to that tune, it's a fun tune anyway, but when I got Stuart to play on it, I immediately thought of him, and luckily, man, I was able to get him to play, and he nailed it, to the wall.
It's that's a fun one. As a matter of fact, I think, Tim, I will let you know that when this broadcast airs, the interviews are in the second hour. This is no secret to listeners. As I open the show, and this will start airing a week out from now, as I open the show, I'm actually going to start it with Hillbilly Neighbor. And I will tell you, you can choose which one I want to end the interview portion with, but I want to end it with, you can agree or disagree, I want to end it with the last cut on the album, I Am America, because I just think it's so gorgeous, and we'll talk about that in a minute as we get there. But I'd like to end this interview session with that tune.
Sure, man. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Then we have, I don't mean to go through every one of them, and I can certainly skip around, Wildwood Flower, Presbyterian, Hymn Medley. Those are the two that are, or at least the two that are, well, there's another one. And I don't recognize the name of The Girl I Left Behind. For some reason, I always thought that was a different, I would not have given it that name. And why do I think, those are the traditional things that you've arranged for this album. Let's start with the last one I mentioned. Why do I think that would have a different title?
It's probably been given different titles over the years, but that actually is the title of the fiddle tune. And actually, it's been played as a fiddle tune traditionally by old-time musicians, mostly. But it has words, and it goes back to the 19th century.
Yeah,
and it's been probably made for parlor. Piano piece, something like that, you know. But it was also used as a military march.
That's what it is. It's from a that's exactly what it is. Thank you. I kept thinking I would come up with a different name, and I couldn't, but that's where it came from. I still don't have the name for it, but at least I know the source that I think of when I hear that tune, and people will recognize it, and it's a good one. It's one of the three good traditionals that you have on here.
Yeah, I wanted to put some traditional tunes on there because I knew, you know, the market that I play in is mostly bluegrass, but I do want to, there's a lot of non-bluegrass things on here, and that was on purpose. I definitely wanted to put those out there and maybe reach a different market. And I'm shooting for the Weather Channel, Steve. That's really what I'm going for. I think I've got a shot.
I think so. Wildwood Flower. Wildwood Flower, everybody knows that tune. Everybody that's ever played the guitar, I played it. They try to play Wildwood Flower. You do a great job of that. That's one that just lives forever and ever and ever, but I'm glad that you took time to put that one on the album. It's just a classic. I mean, how can you not record Wildwood Flower when you have these opportunities?
I know, man. I just thought about it, and I didn't want to do a real complicated version of it because you could really go off the deep end on that tune.
Yeah, but
pick arrangement. I just wanted it to hew directly to the melody, and that's another one of those parlor tunes that was picked up later on by the Carters, and they didn't write that tune.
No.
They were like, oh, that's a new Carter family. So, no, that song goes way back, and it has lyrics, and it was played in parlors, too, pianos and probably mandolins in the 1900s, early 1900s. So I think, you know, the Carters actually did sing it too, but I really like the feel of that song, and I did it in a drop E position, which it's out of C position, but I only capo the first four strings, or first five strings, and capo at the fourth fret, so it gives it the drop E, and that gives it a little more of a drone quality.
Yeah, yeah.
And
great.
It makes it more suitable to doing solo, so
Totally out of the blue here, Tim. Do you remember Jim Stafford did a version of that was called the Wildwood Weed?
I do, because as you might imagine, everybody asks me if I'm related.
Are you related to Jim
Stafford? Yeah, which I'm not, as far as I know. But you know, he was a fine guitarist.
He was. He very good. Very good.
Yeah.
He was fun. I happen to remember that going through my head as you were mentioning it. Yeah, it was. He had a big hit with
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Great song. You know, Matt and Cal Petty, and there's a, you know, a bunch of Spiders and Snakes is his big hit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry for that diversion. I just happened to think of that. Smit and Kitten has a more jazzy kind of a flow to it. And I'm not saying the chord structure, but on the album, I think that's just a nice... explain that one for me a little bit. You're very nice to mention the tunings, because I want to get into that kind of detail that allows. But tell me a little bit about Smit and Kitten.
Smit and Kitten is actually in standard tune, and it's got a diminished chord there to start it out, and it's sort of a jazzy melody.
Yeah.
And to understand Smit and Kitten, you got to realize that it's actually inspired by watching a cat play. So that if you play that melody, you'll say, "Oh, I can hear the cat." And then in the middle part, you'll hear him climbing the curtains.
Okay.
And he climbs all the way up, and then you'll hear him slide down, you know. And then I started again, he's playing again. And that was actually inspired by Bobby Starnes's, Bobby and Connie have a little kitten and named Darcy. And she was playing around the studio, and that's what that was inspired by.
Well, I would not have guessed that either. See, I learned so much from these encounters, and I have two cats, and when I leave this session, I'm going to run out. And of course, they're kind of old now. I don't think they're going to be climbing anything. But now that I know that, I'm going to visualize one of my cats doing those gymnastics. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, yeah. Listen to it, if you know.
I will. And the next time I see you, if I hear it, I'll tell you. If not, I'll say, "Help me out again. Explain that again." So. You have, by the way, I posted the picture of the inside on Facebook of your heroes and inspirations, and I'm with you on a lot of them, but you have more people, and I didn't want to cheat, I didn't want to go through them all, but you have more people that you list inside this album, Heroes and Inspirations, than I've ever seen, a more diverse group. I'm not even going to look up Basil Polidorus or Malcolm Halcombe. Yeah, I don't know who these people are, and I didn't want to. I was thought about Googling, and I thought, well, I don't want to do that, because that would ruin the surprise if there's anything to say about them. But you really do. Here's the point I'm making: you really do draw from a lot of different influences, and I've known you about that. I've known that about you, Tim, from talking to you in the past. But you really do. You must do nothing but listen to music and then write music, and then you absorb so much.
Well, I have music that really moves me, and. I go through these processes where I'll latch on to one tune or one composer, and their music just really speaks to me, and I'll listen to it over and over again for a period of weeks. And Basil Polidorus wrote the theme music for my favorite all-time movie / television show, which is Lonesome Dove. And so that Lonesome Dove theme just always spoke to me. And... you know, like Malcolm Holcomb is a he's a guitar player, singer-songwriter, who's got this gravelly, gritty voice and has written some of the most amazing songs. And just people like that, you know. I mean, I'll hear these things, people will turn me on to them, and I don't care whether it's jazz or blues or whatever it is, funk, hip-hop. I mean, I've actually listened to some of that, you know. I mean, you can...
True confessions of Tim Stafford on Unreal Bluegrass. He listens to hip hop. I bet you nobody in your audience would know that.
Well, I don't listen to it on a regular basis.
Okay, all right, sure. Back away from it. That's fair.
But I am, you know, I have. And
okay.
I'm teaching an American roots music course, so I've kind of had to learn some of that. But,
we'll say yeah. You experimented. You experimented.
I have. Yeah.
Via, I'm just going to kind of bounce that, and we'll talk about these as they come up if you want, but Via Dolorosa, again, the influences that you have, I want to slow down a little bit and get back to the content of the album, but your heroes and inspirations just kind of blew me away, and I invite anyone who sees it to go through that list without Googling and see how many you recognize. I just think it's kind of an interesting statement about your music and your influence. But let's talk about on the album Via Dolorosa. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that's the name actually comes from the Way of the Cross, which is a street in Jerusalem where the legend is that Jesus actually carried the cross along this path. And I felt I had written instrumenter came up with it, and thought, yeah. And I was inspired, I tell you, by Schindler's List, the theme from Schindler's List, which always is just moved me to tears. Every time I hear it, I get a tear.
Yeah.
You know, I can't. It has nothing to do with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's independent of the movie. It just brings total tears to my eyes, and so I was kind of inspired by that and came up with this thing, but it needed a link with the title, and I thought that actually fit it pretty well. So it's just a very slow, mournful finger-picking song.
It is, and it's another. And I will say this, Tim: a lot of your solo stuff, when you're really just playing by yourself on these solo releases that you do, they're just beautiful melodies, and I just think that I'm glad that you took the opportunity to preserve them, and they're just really pretty guitar or not, they're just pretty melodies, which I think is always a good thing. Like you mentioned Wildwood Flower, you could have made it much more involved and intricate, but it's a great melody. I don't know that it's a beautiful melody, but your stuff is just really pretty. The stuff that you write and play by yourself is just a pretty tune. I like listening to them.
Thanks so much, Steve. I remember making a conscious decision a few years ago that I just love pretty melodies, and they speak to me, and that's what moves me. So you need to seek out things that move you, and you know, I try not to force the melodies, but if a pretty melody comes to you, then you ought to try to develop it a little bit and make it as good as you can. I feel like that's very important.
I can see if you're just sitting around playing guitar, you could do something more involved. But if you're just listening to your guitar and listening to what's in your head, these are the kind of melodies that I think that musicians would play. Maybe if they are just alone somewhere, just kind of playing. To me, that speaks about who you are as a person. I mentioned earlier, there is an Absolute Blues on here, Backstreet Blues, and I'm just going to skip around a little bit and kind of touch on some of these things, but. I know that you like the blues. I know that you like jazz. I can tell from everything you're listening. If you got Robert Johnson as one of your heroes, I get it. So talk about the Backstreet Blues. I don't think it's Backstreet Boys.
No.
Backseat. I'm sorry. I'm not even reading it correctly because your print is a Backseat, not Backstreet.
Yeah, Backseat. Backseat Blues. This is that tune that was written some 35 years ago. And it's when I first started messing around with this tune, and I recorded some stuff I had just been working on at that time. I think I was actually living at the time in a rented house up in Norton, Virginia, and maybe that's why I wrote some blues. I don't know, but it's in that tuning, and it had this real gritty feel to it. And so I actually used a different guitar on that. I used a Cotton signature guitar that Gary Cotton built, and I played closer to the bridge on purpose because I wanted a grittier, a different pick. And that makes it a little brighter, a little grittier, a little totally different sound. And, man, I just love the blues. I love bluesy songs. My mother, who's 92, still loves the blues. And every time I do a bluesy type show, I love that blues in that. And she's a big... some big Ray Charles fan.
And Ray's one of your inspirations. I'm not going to name them all. I don't want to give it away, but Ray's in there.
Oh, absolutely, man. I just love soulful, bluesy singing and all kinds of blues, Piedmont blues, Delta blues, you know. And I love bluesy songs and bluegrass, too. That's the kind that I end up doing most often in Blue Highways. Mm-hmm. That's fine with me, you know.
And then Tim, and a couple tunes down, you have a tune which could be interpreted, I guess, by the title, which should never happen. But Shaker Vanity could be a couple things. It could be a piece of furniture. It could be a member of the Shakers who was vain. But on that one, you have drums and all kinds of percussion popping up.
Yeah, that's actually a drum track that I use those to rehearse with when I practice. I practice with a drum track. Usually it's a funk drum track, and that's what this was, and I liked it so well I ended up using it on the record. And it actually ended up fitting the pieces of the song, which is weird. wasn't planned that way. It just ended up happening. It sounds like a real drummer, and he's reacting to what I'm doing and all that, but that's not what it is.
Well,
the shaker, I love the little instrumental riff. And then when I was trying to name it, I'd seen a documentary on shakers, and it talked about how they, in their famous furniture, they actually would leave a flaw on purpose. And they called it shaker vanity because they're so austere otherwise.
Yeah.
Little pieces would make them more individual, you know, which is not something they...
No. So it was a piece of furniture. It was also a little bit of the maker's vanity saying, this is me.
Right.
Huh?
Yeah, I love that.
That's cool.
And it's still concept, so...
The bounce back up for a second to Watercolor Sky. Is that what I hear? Is that why do I? You mentioned playing close to the bridge on one tune, and that makes a different sound for the people listening. But on Watercolor Sky, is anything about that electric, or is there a more hollow sound or echoey sound? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it's actually a different reverb on that. I actually produced that here at my house and recorded it, and we just mastered it with the rest of the record. And I was trying out a different reverb and. It doesn't have anything electric in it.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I played it rather than close to the bridge, which gives you a grittier, tinnier sound.
Yeah.
I played that one further up towards the top of the sound hole, which gives you an open, battered sort of sound.
That's what I was thinking. It's a more full hollow and a little more ring. There's a little more ring to it and depth to it. And for the people listening, play near the bridge. You're just going to get, as you just described it, tinnier or thinner, but it's a different application. It's not good or bad, but if the further you move away from the bridge, the more the strings are going to vibrate, which just kind of only makes sense.
It's also in the open C9 tuning, so it's another song in that tuning.
The Long Branch Coffee, then, is another one of those, I don't want to call it country blues, it's kind of a shuffle.
Yeah, it's more of a Doc Watson, Merle Travis, Chet Atkins, who I was thinking of there. And I really love that style of playing. And Merle Travis just couldn't be beat on that. And he used two fingers, you know, which most players, including me, I use three, and I can't get half the sound he did with two. I don't know how that works, but, it's just a fun song. And, I'm a Gunsmoke fan, too, so that's where that title came from.
Wait, back up. It's been a while since I've seen Gunsmoke. Long Branch Coffee, was that the coffee that they used in the... What, tell me that.
Well, the saloon in Gunsmoke was the Long Branch.
Oh, okay.
It's based on a real saloon that actually was in Dodge City
okay. In
the early years, but there was no Miss Kitty and there was no Marshall Dillon or any of that. But... And also they show this little coffee pot there in the credits, so I was thinking, Long Branch Coffee.
Okay, all right, good. That was good. The very last tune then, and we mentioned, I'm going to play that when this interview concludes, you bring in Tim Shelton, I Am America. That's been made into a video, not just a YouTube video, but it's actually made into a video presentation. I want you to spend the last few minutes or so talking about that tune.
Well, the tune itself is Bobby Starnes, and Bobby had the idea, and we worked on it together and finished it. And we just felt like that it was it's a patriotic song, but it's a very, very positive patriotic song. And with the country being as divided as it is right now, I think that we both thought it was a good thing to make a song that's all about unity. And that's really what that song is about. It's about what's good about America. That we can all agree on, and that sometimes gets lost when we're at each other's throats. We need to sit back and look and see what's really good about this country, and I think that's what this is based on. Tim Shelton, he's sung several demos for Bobby and I over the years, and this was just one of the demo sessions that we did, and we loved his vocals so much we just decided to add to it and make it a track on this record.
And Tim, the great thing about that, and Tim Shelton just blows it away. I mean, he's such a good singer. And but the thing about the song, though, is like as you mentioned, it makes a positive statement without saying I am and you're not. It's all of us are.
Exactly. That's why the last verse is, we are.
Mm-hmm.
We are all these things.
Yeah.
You know? And so that was done on purpose. It starts out, if the country could talk, this is what it would say. Yeah. I am a bridge in Dallas County. I am, you know, a field in Pennsylvania. But by the end, it's we are, you know, all these things. So that was on purpose. And yeah, Tim Shelton is one of the best singers you're ever going to hear in any kind of music.
He is. And when did you write that song? I'm curious.
I believe it was a couple years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, listen, it's a fun. Thanks, Tim Stafford. Again, you're always welcome, and I always find you at some point. But the new album, Acoustic Guitar on Hedge Drive, which now I know the name of that where it came from, was the reason for us to chat this time. And I always enjoy it. You always teach me new things about what you're doing, and I hope that I give you the opportunity to get into what you're trying to put out as far as the music and what you mean to do. Because you know, people can interpret things how they want, but I still kind of like to know what you're thinking and what you're putting into it from an artist point of view. So I appreciate you for that.
Well, I appreciate you, Steve. I think you're great. It won't be a mutual praise party here, but I tell you what, man, I love your show and what you do.
Oh, thank you. Well, you're very kind. You're very kind, Tim. Well, listen, I know that I'll catch you down the road as the year, as we get into the season, and I look forward. And I'll say hi when I see you out there, and I'll probably see you in Raleigh again this year, I imagine.
Please do, man. Yeah, I hope to see you more than once this year.
So. Yeah. All right. Listen, Tim Stafford, Acoustic Guitar is a great album. Thanks again for your time and your consideration, and I know the listeners appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Steve.
I'll see you, man.
All right. Take care, bud.
Yep.